Seekers, it is Thursday. Depends on where you're listening and what time you're listening, right? last night and most of today, I watched and have been watching the video, most of it on MSNBC, of the troop pullout from Iraq. 7 years and 5 months after we invaded and occupied that country for no reason, absolutely no reason whatsoever. 7 years and 5 months after we committed a war crime, George W. Bush ordered our military commanders to commit a war crime, and we, the people of the United States, participated in the continuation of that war crime, and then to add war crime upon war crime, our Democratic Party leaders refused to impeach the bastard and turn him over to the authorities in The Hague, both Bush and Cheney. So 7 years and 5 months after our war crime, the networks certainly have been focusing an awful lot of attention on our withdrawal from the scene of the crime. Now, Obama had set an August 31st deadline for ending U.S. combat operations there, so I guess we are supposed to celebrate the fact that we beat the deadline by 2 or 3 weeks. The 4th Striker Brigade, which is based in Washington State, was Fourth Striker Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division, was the unit designated by media, I guess, or the military commanders or someone, to be the one photographed withdrawing across the border with Kuwait. My feelings about it, of course, are not ambivalent at all. I mean, I see what happened in Iraq as a crime against humanity perpetrated by the Bush-Cheney crime family against innocent people in Iraq who are already suffering under a dictator supported while he was in power by the United States of America and our allies until such time as we wanted him to leave. And when he wouldn't leave, we concocted all sorts of lies and deceptions so that we could send in a massive invasion, murder hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, cause thousands of our own young people to die, and now we're supposed to celebrate. Now we're supposed to celebrate. And to me, it is the it's not even the final chapter. You know, don't believe this hog crap that this withdrawal by the Striker Brigade represents an end to U.S. combat operations in Iraq. That's nonsense. And that all the combat troops have been withdrawn. Let me tell you something, in case you don't know this. We are leaving 50,000 troops in Iraq for the indefinite future. Every single soldier that puts on the uniform of the United States of America is a combat troop. I don't give a damn if he or she is a cook. I don't care if that soldier is a medic. That soldier is trained to be a soldier. He is, by definition, a combat troop. So to hear media and government spokespeople talk about the end of combat operations, I'll tell you when the combat operations end in Iraq, when every single troop is gone. That's when they end. Now, while our people are the group chosen to be the symbolic withdrawal of the last combat troops, while they're crossing the border, the southern border, into Kuwait, in the northern part of the country, insurgents continue, and God knows who's who in Iraq. Iraq doesn't have a government. We have gone into a country, murdered hundreds of thousands of its people, allowed our own people to be blown to pieces, and we didn't even have the decency to wait until there was a government established in this godforsaken, sad, bloodied country. So there is no government in Iraq. In the north, as we are pulling out in the south, insurgents continue killing Iraqi government employees, so-called, because they work for what is supposed to be the government of Iraq, but it's not effective. I don't think there is a ministry working in Iraq except, of course, the oil ministry. And the only reason the oil ministry is working is because we insisted, we and our British partners insisted, that the oil minister's position be filled up and running so that we can get to the real reason why we went into the country to commit mass murder and war crimes to begin with, to get the oil. That's why, okay? That had to be up and running before we would pull out. It's up and running. There's no point in our staying. But there is no government in Iraq. Five Iraqi government, quote, employees were killed in roadside bombings yesterday. On Tuesday, a suicide bomber killed 61 army recruits in central Baghdad, right in the middle of town. The slaughter goes on. This is what happens when you go into a country illegally, immorally, unethically. After supporting its dictator for decades, you go in, destroy the dictator, hang him, execute his top cadre of people that we have supported, withdraw, and then this, the chaos. This is shameful. The invasion and murder in Iraq by the United States is one of the most shameful episodes in our history. And I have yet to hear one single punk-ass reporter on any of these networks or any anchor person talk about this in a real sense. Not one is willing to put his or her ass on the line and say a war crime was committed, and now the U.S. is leaving the scene of the crime. And what happens after the so-called combat troops are gone? The Obama administration is planning to fill their positions with, are you ready for this, private contractors. Now, who do you suppose that will be? Private contractors. Do you think that means bridge builders, road builders, people to go in and restore the water systems that we destroyed, the electrical grid that we blew to hell, people to go in and repair the damage to the entire infrastructure of that country? Is that what you think they mean by contractors? If that's what you think, you're a damn fool. What they mean by contractors are military contractors. People like Blackwater and DynCorp and Xe and the rest of these hired killers who will go in and sop up the blood and continue the bloodletting. Because you see, Iraq doesn't have a government, and we have interests there that need to be protected. More when we come back. Stay with us. And the quality of mercy is my strength. The hour. So the big plan now that the last of combat troops, so-called, as if some of our soldiers and Marines are not really combat. Jesus God. They haven't been trained to be combat troops, right? By October 2011, the State Department will assume responsibility for training the Iraqi police. The State Department. Training Iraqi police. And their death squads and their military, because like our situation in Afghanistan, although Afghanistan, of course, is a much, much worse situation. But in Iraq, the people there are not supporters of the new puppet regime that we have assured would be in power, even though nobody can figure out who really is in power. But the candidates in the selection process were engineered by the United States to the point that a lot of the Sunnis said to hell with it. In the first round of elections in that country, elections so-called, I don't know. There's no point really getting into all of that nonsense except to say there is no government in Iraq. The country is still home to insurgents, people that want all foreign presence gone. They are chock-a-block now, apparently, with Al-Qaeda, wherever the hell that is, Iranian-backed militias. So the State Department is going to take over military operations. Think about that for a second. The State Department. Now, they're not going to be called military operations, you see. If you control language, you control reality. So the State Department is planning to more than double whatever private security forces are there now, up to as many as 7,000. That's just for openers. That's according to administration officials. That would be the Obama administration. Part of the job of the private security contractors. Now, remember, these guys will not fall under anybody's jurisdiction. They are not military, so the Code of Military Justice will not apply to these people. U.S. law will not apply to these people. Iraq doesn't have a government, so it's not going to that law. So these will be renegades. These and almost all of them will be former U.S. military. Now, how do you think they're going to feel going back into a country where they saw their friends blown to pieces with IEDs? Do you think that they are going to play by any rules? What are the rules? What are the rules? We can now legitimately claim that we are not subject to Geneva Conventions. Not that we ever were. We're the United by God States. We don't have to play by that crap. We don't have to play by any of these so-called rules of war. Yo, we make up our own rules. You understand what I'm saying? Of course you do. So what rules do you think the private security forces are going to play by when they go back? There will be five major fortified compounds across Iraq. Super forts. If we were still slaughtering and murdering Native Americans here, we would call them forts. That's what they used to be called out in the Indian country, in this country. In Iraq, they are called fortified compounds. There will be five of them that we know about. The security contractors who will operate there will warn of enemy rocket attacks, search for roadside bombs, fly reconnaissance drones. How many of those reconnaissance drones do you suppose will be unarmed? You see what I'm talking about? The private security forces, I like this part, will also staff quick reaction forces to aid civilians in distress. How do you like that language? Huh? How do you like that, huh? Quick reaction force. That used to be called a Marine platoon, or but now it's called a quick reaction force. Civilians, contractors, a quick reaction force to aid civilians in distress. What does that mean? Civilians who don't have water? Civilians who don't have food or electricity? Civilians who don't have medical help for their depleted uranium deformed babies? Or does it mean civilians in distress, civilians who are trying to defend themselves against insurgent forces that want the United States completely out, including their fortified compounds? This is a joke, a sick joke, and you know it is. And as you watch this garbage on television today about the withdrawal of U.S. forces, don't buy into it, you know, unless you're as big of a sucker as corporate America likes to believe you are. Stay with us.
Is your car a time bomb just waiting to go off? Can you afford?
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. What we have for you here is a compilation of statements, comments, remarks that were said by the war criminal George W. Bush during the time that this crime against humanity was committed by the United States against the people of Iraq. We put it together for you. We want you to hear a compilation now of George W. Bush statements regarding Iraq.
We cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
We must not and will not allow the world's worst leaders to hold the United States and our friends and allies blackmail.
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hate.
We don't fight a religion, we fight evil. Our struggle is against evil people that claim they're religious but are not.
We must collectively get after those who kill in the name of some kind of false religion.
It is not only important for the homeland security of America that we succeed, it is equally as important for generations of Americans who have yet be born.
The Iraqi regime is a threat to any American and to threats who are friends of America.
No doubt his hatred is mainly directed at us. After all, this is the guy that tried to kill my dad.
Somebody say, now, where's Mandela?
Well, Mandela's dead.
because Saddam Hussein killed all the Mandelas.
The world has waited a long time for Mr. Saddam Hussein to disarm. He'll say, oh, I'm disarming, after he said he has no arms.
I'm honored to shake the hand of a brave Iraqi citizen who had his hand cut off by Saddam Hussein.
After the bombing, most Iraqis saw what the perpetrators of this attack were trying to do.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
It has developed weapons of mass death.
Weapons of mass production.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists.
Now, we have no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Including members of Al-Qaeda. The war on terror involves Saddam Hussein because of the nature of Saddam Hussein and his willingness to terrorize himself.
1 year ago today, the time for excuse-making has come to an end.
A peace, free, and secure Iraq in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous historical impact.
It is the calling of our time to rid the world of terror. That's our calling. It's the calling of the 21st century. And it's a calling that we will not tire for. It's a calling that we will keep in our mind.
Our mission in Iraq is a vital mission. The mission is one that will be, that we obviously couldn't complete if we didn't fulfill our goals.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States have prevailed.
I firmly believe that the mission will yield peace.
Pulling the troops out would send a terrible signal to the enemy. You know, the United States is weak.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
We still at war. It's in our country's interest to find those who would do harm to us and get them out of harm's way. There will be serious consequences for the Iraqi people, and that's freedom.
It wasn't all that long ago that we started military operations. We've been there, how many days? Are you counting the days since we've been there? Because I'm not.
American forces were to step back from Baghdad before it is more secure. A contagion of violence could spill out across the entire country. The terrorists could emerge from the chaos with a safe haven in Iraq to replace the one they had in Afghanistan, which they used to plan the attacks of September the 11th, 2001.
Fully understand those who say you can't win this thing militarily. That's exactly what the United States military says, that you can't win this military.
To win this war against freedom.
We must deal with threats before they fully materialize through death on our own soils.
I hear there's rumors on the internets that we're going to have a draft. We're not going to have a draft, period.
I made it very plain. We will not have an all-volunteer army. And yet this week, we will have an all-volunteer army.
I think we are welcomed, but it was not a peaceful welcome.
They're obviously killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis.
And when Americans learn to speak a language, learn to speak Arabic, those in the Arabic regional say, gosh, America's interested in us. They care enough to learn how we speak.
Under the dictator, prisons like Abu Ghraib were symbols of death and torture.
Prime Minister brought up the Abu Ghraib situation.
Detainees at Abu Ghraib will be relocated.
But I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
And we're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
I understand the anguish that some feel about the death that takes place. I grieve for every death.
I know what it means to hug mothers and wives.
Wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
The Iraqis are fully staffed and they got their team in there. But give my chance a plan to work.
And victory is a country that where the Saddamists and the terrorists can't unwind the democracy.
We've got a strategy, and I'm going to keep talking about the strategy. It'll yield to victories.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done. It'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
There's no doubt in my mind when history was written, the final page will say victory was achieved by the United States of America for the good of the world.
There have been disappointments. Not having weapons of mass destruction was a significant disappointment. I don't know if you want to call those mistakes or not, but things didn't go according to plan. Let's put it that way.
Things didn't go according to plan. Let's put it that way. There you have a... Do you remember some of that stuff? Huh? The garbled language that this freak used as the war crime was committed. The ridiculous statements. The false charges, the deliberate lies. And the American people went along with it. Now, I'll tell you something. That you probably already know, even you right-wing morons know this. What we did in Iraq was, in fact, by any definition, and I realize we don't subscribe to global definitions anymore about what constitutes legal and illegal behavior, moral and immoral behavior on the international stage. We don't pay any attention to that anymore. If it involves crossing other people's borders, if it involves demonizing other people's religions, if it involves destabilizing other people's currencies or governments, if it involves what is universally recognized as war crimes, we don't pay attention to that anymore. That's for other nations to play with. We do whatever we goddamn choose. And it's up to our leaders du jour to make those decisions. Whether it is a war criminal like Bush, or an emerging war criminal like Barack Obama. It doesn't make any difference. Or a war criminal like Bill Clinton. It doesn't make any difference. We go however, by God, we want to go. But eventually, the world is going to get tired of this. I mean, they already are, but they're going to get tired of it to the point where they're going to say, you know what? We have had our guts full of activities by the United States. We've had enough. Now, Panama is not going to say that, because what can Panama do? But maybe China will say that. Maybe Pakistan will say that. Maybe a nuclear-armed government/organization will say that. And if they ever do, if that day comes, hold on to your ass, Mr. and Mrs. America, because there's an awful lot of anger out there in the world about what we have done and continue to do. We do not treat other people with respect. We pretend for domestic consumption back home that we are trying. With so much effort to treat other nations, other societies with respect. When the truth is, we wormhole our way into their society, or we just start bombing them openly and indiscreetly. But for the most part, we will worm our way in with our little secret operatives and our black ops people and our hit squads and destabilize their country and tell them what we say they're allowed and not allowed to do. Eventually, that is not going to work. And when that day comes, I think we in the United States are going to pay a very, very difficult and bloody price. You think? You got that mystery. Lord, I need a plan. This compromise and a bag full of alibis. Lord, as empty as a bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Now, you may think what I just said in the right before the break was a little bit harsh about U.S. policy, you know, war crimes, and we don't recognize the sovereignty of other nations. We don't recognize international law. If you do any checking on your own, which most people don't, you'll find that that's simply true. You want an instant example? Back in October last year, the Obama administration signed an agreement with the government of Colombia that would give the U.S. military access to Colombian military bases. Okay? And yesterday, a Colombian constitutional court ruled. Now, a constitutional court is like our Supreme Court. The court in Colombia ruled that that agreement between the U.S. military, or I'm sorry, the Obama administration and the government of Colombia, that that agreement is unconstitutional under Colombian law. They can't do it. And the reason it's unconstitutional is because the agreement had not received approval from the Colombian Congress. You see, they haven't gotten to the point there that we've gotten to, where the President of the United States, no matter who he or she may be, now has dictatorial power to order things done. The legislative branch has become superfluous, except for certain functions that benefit corporate America. Well, in other nations, they haven't reached that point yet. They still have separation of powers. They still have most of the power in these countries vested in the legislative branch. Okay? So what is the Obama administration's reaction to the Colombian Supreme Court saying this agreement is unconstitutional? Well, first of all, the agreement gives U.S. military access to seven Colombian bases. Now, you can imagine how that sits with the government of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela or other countries in South America that have recently gone leftist. That means they want their country back from the United States, from U.S. corporations, from international corporations. So they've gone leftist, which means this is our country. We don't want you intruding. Well, the countries around Colombia don't like this. All of a sudden, Colombia is granting the U.S. military access. What does that mean? Well, what does it mean when the U.S. military moves into your neighborhood? You know damn good and well what it means, and so do these countries. Well, yesterday, Philip Crowley, U.S. State Department spokesman, said that the United States, now listen to this, the United States, quote, looks to the Santos government, that's the South American head of state, the U.S., quote, looks to the Santos government to take appropriate steps to make sure that we can sustain our bilateral relationship, end quote. Now, what Crowley is saying is the United States expects the government of Santos government to ignore the Supreme Court. Now, here's another statement from Crowley, quote, there can be, you know, actions taken by the executive to overcome, you know, the questions that have been raised, end quote. So what the U.S. State Department, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama spokesperson is saying for public consumption is that we, the United States, look for the government of Colombia to ignore the ruling by its constitutional court, its Supreme Court. Ignore it. And continue this agreement to allow the United States access, quote, quote, to seven military bases. Now, the U.S. State Department has tried to allay Latin American concerns about the military pact by insisting that it's not aimed at other countries. No. We're not. We don't want access to 7 bases in Colombia because we have any designs at all on any other country in Central America. Not even, you know, Venezuela. The agreement, the United States says, is aimed at cooperation against drug trafficking and terrorism and illegal armed groups. Illegal armed groups? Terrorism? Is there Colombian terrorists coming to the United States to bomb the Pentagon or... Huh. Oh, by the way, the United States has provided Colombia more than $6 billion in gifts over the past decade to combat drug trafficking and leftist guerrillas under a program known as Plan Colombia. Plan Colombia. And a few months back, the Democratic United States Congress approved $46 million to refurbish a military base, one of 7 included under the agreement. $46 million. I thought we were out of money. I thought the Republicans insisted that... Oh, never mind. Stay with us. We'll be back momentarily. I'm Mike Malloy.
Your child.
It's 877-996-2556. If you would like to comment on what we're talking about this during the program, 877-996-2556. So if you want to join in, give us a holler. I got a couple of emails this morning wanting to know why on yesterday's program I spent a lot of time talking about, and spend a lot of time, not just yesterday's program, talking about Beck or... Laura Schlesinger or Sarah Palin or the rest of these right-wing thugs when there are more important things to talk about. And, you know, my answer is very simply, these people collectively are trying to destroy the country. Just because they have American-sounding names doesn't mean anything. When you have somebody like Glenn Beck who wants to see murder in the streets, when you have somebody like Ann Coulter who has advocated going into other countries and murdering the leaders, when you have people like Laura Schlesinger who is just a very sick woman who is on radio, or up until the end of this year will be on radio, giving advice, when the only person that she comes in contact with that desperately needs advice on how to handle one's life is her. When you have people like Sarah Palin, who is a disease in this country, when you have all this going on, that is destructive to the United States, destructive to us socially, destructive to us as we continue to attempt to be a cohesive society. One has to talk about it, doesn't one? If we were being invaded by terrorists, wouldn't we talk about that? These are homegrown terrorists. What are we supposed to do? Ignore the homegrown terrorists? Is that what we do? Do we pretend that Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck and Laura Schlesinger and Ann Coulter and the rest of these pigs are not homegrown terrorists? Do we pretend that they're just, what, political commentators? Entertainers? People who love the country and are seeking social justice and a clean, clear working of the democratic process? Is that what we're supposed? Come on. So in light of that, the latest, there is a newspaper online, whatever it is, online, a website, World Nut Daily. I think it's known as World Net Daily, but it's staffed by a bunch of freaks, right-wing freaks, who also want to destroy America, who also want to see blood in the streets of America. All these people do. You do understand that. I hope you do. World Net Daily is now attacking the crazed vomitous Ann Coulter. I love it when right-wing individuals and organizations try to eat each other. It's fun to watch while they're eating each other. While they're still alive, but it's like those videos you see on National Geographic Wild, you know, where a wildebeest is galumphing across the savannah, and here comes a couple of female lions, and they bring it down, and the wildebeest is still alive while the lions are eating it. But that's what, you know, World Nut Daily is like the pack of lions, and Ann Coulter obviously is the wildebeest in this particular story. But Gordon in Oklahoma City sent me this because I do not go to World Nut Daily. There's enough craziness on mainstream media without going to these freaks. But here's the story. Ann Coulter has launched a verbal assault on World Nut Daily editor Joseph Farah. Is that his name? She calls Farah swine and a publicity whore. Ann Coulter is calling this guy swine and a publicity whore. That Ann Coulter said, after she, Ann, was dismissed as a keynote speaker for World Nut Daily's upcoming Taking America Back National Conference. They all want to take America back from the Negro. And all the Negroes running the government. Taking America Back National Conference in Miami. Ta-da! 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 Let's take America back from the Negroes! Oh, and the Jews! And, the homosexuals! And Coulter was to be the keynote speaker. Who else you want to bet shows up there? What do you want to bet the suicide boy will be there? What do you want to bet the child molester will be there? What do you want to bet the guy that's going blind will be there, right? Huh? In an email to the Daily Caller, which is another toilet website founded by Tucker Carlson. Remember him? Remember Tucker Carlson, the bow tie boy? She sent him an email, and it's gotten out. And Coulter says, Farah is doing this for publicity, all caps, and publicity alone. Now, as reported yesterday, Gordon tells me, Coulter was dropped from World Nut Daily's event next month because of her plan to address a gathering titled HomoCon. Just stay with me on this. HomoCon. Now, what is HomoCon? Well, that's an event sponsored by a group of Republican, gay Republicans called Geo Proud. G-O-P-R-O-U-D. Geo Proud. Now, what Geo Proud is, Geo Proud is a Republican group that promotes same-sex marriage and military service for open gay folk. It's called Geo Proud. GOP Proud. Geo Proud. Now, the reason Geo Proud is out there is because Log Cabin Republicans, the other gay Republican group, was not, you know, activist enough, or wasn't fighting for the rights of homosexuals to go into the military openly or have get married. So HomoCon, I guess that stands for Homosexual Conference. I don't know. I'm getting lost in all the... HomoCon is the gathering sponsored by the homosexual Republican group Geo Proud, GOP Proud, Geo Proud, that promotes same-sex marriage. So, Coulter decided to go speak there. And why not? You know, I mean, Ann Coulter would speak to anybody if the price were right, you know, as long as she gets her fee. The part that I find intriguing is if this group of homosexual people are so interested in promoting same-sex marriage and open service in the military for gay folk, what the hell are they doing in the Republican Party? The Republicans want to kill you. They want to cut your throats. Oh, well. So anyway, Farah, Joseph Farah, the guy who runs World Nut Daily, said that his decision to drop her from Taking America Back National Conference in Miami, his decision to drop her was a gut-wrenching one for his team because of their fondness for Anne as both a person and a writer speaker. We love her, but she's swung over and aligned herself now with the queers. And we can't allow that because we are a Christian family-oriented World Nut Daily. So this little battle has started, and I want to share some more of this with you. Now, if you don't like this, rather than send me an email tomorrow and say, why do you talk about Ann Coulter? Why don't you just go away? Just don't listen. We'll be right back. For the rest of you who want to hear the rest of this madness, we'll be right back.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, Gordon in Oklahoma City sent me this the story, and I find it interesting. The same way when I was 13 years old, I found it interesting when two people that I really disliked would get into a schoolyard fistfight. I always found that kind of interesting, too. And again, the reason I talk about this kind of stuff, that a lot of people say, well, why are you talking about that? There's important things. Because these people, these are all domestic terrorists. World Nut Daily, World Nut Daily would like to see America in the toilet. Ann Coulter, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, all of them. These are domestic terrorists. That's why I talk about them. Anyway, Joseph Farah, who runs World Net Daily, decided to drop Ann Coulter as his keynote speaker at the upcoming World Net Daily Taking America Back National Conference in Miami next month. And Ann Coulter is all upset about it, says this guy's just doing it for publicity. Farah, the guy who runs World Net Daily, said the decision was a gut-wrenching one because his team of terrorists, they love Ann Coulter. Farah said the following, issued the statement, quote, "Ultimately, as a matter of principle, it would not make sense for us to have Ann speak to a conference about taking America back when she clearly does not recognize that the ideals to be espoused there simply do not include the radical and very unconservative agenda represented by GOP Proud, you know, the queers. The drift of the conservative movement to a brand of materialistic libertarianism is one of the main reasons we planned this conference from the beginning." No, you didn't, you lying little bastard. You planned it so you could talk about how to take America back from the Negroes that have taken over America. They can't even be truthful about their lies. So Ann Coulter got her panties in a wad with World Net Daily's publication of her email discussion with Farah concerning her appearance. See, she was writing back and forth. Now, wait a second, boys. And the boys were writing, now, wait a second, Ann. So Ann Coulter said, quote, "This was an email exchange between friends. And even though I didn't expressly say off the record, and I believe everything I said, he's a swine for using my private emails, politely answering him. Why would he do such a despicable thing for publicity?" Now, she wrote all that and sent it to Bowtie Boy over at the Daily Caller. Do you love it? I mean, you got to love this, right? You know, Tucker Carlson and World Net Daily's Joe Farah, and Ann Coulter, all, you know, involved in this menage a death, you know, or death à trois, whatever you want to call it. Now, that's not enough, not for man. She continues, "I will say that Farah could give less than two," and then she uses a scatological term that has to do with poo-poo. She says, "I will say that Farah could give less than two blanks about the conservative movement. As demonstrated by his promotion of the birther nonsense." Oh, Annie, you think it's nonsense? Oh. "Long ago disproved by my newspaper, Human Events. Also, Sweetness and Light, American Spectator, and National Review, etc., etc., etc. He's the only allegedly serious conservative pushing the birther thing. For one reason, it gets hits on his website." End quote, Ann Coulter. God damn, I love this. So Farah responded to Ann Coulter's remarks by saying, "Ann is angry. I hope she calms down and there can be some restoration, repentance, and forgiveness. She said some mean things about me. But I can sleep at night knowing I did the right thing in God's economy." God's economy? End quote. David Kupelian, World Net Daily's longtime managing editor, added, quote, Ann Coulter's a hero to many, but her angry accusation that we were motivated by publicity couldn't be more off base. This wasn't Mr. Farah's sole decision. Our executive team, including me, discussed this at length in a serious and thoughtful manner. And in the end, we went with what we considered to be the principal decision. You see, we hate queers and we don't like Negroes. And the fact that Ann Coulter hangs out with both means we don't want her. I added that last part. The Daily Caller, that's Tucker Carlson's little rag, noted that World Net Daily was not the sole voice of outrage at Ann's decision to address the homosexual group. Peter LeBarbera, founder of Americans for Truth, said, quote, as a fan of Ann Coulter, it pains me to see her cave into political correctness and lend credibility to the phony homosexual conservatives over at GOP Proud. They're not conservatives, they're queers! It just goes on and on. I mean, there's more here. If you're interested, I don't know what to tell you. You would have to go to World Nut Daily to read any of this crap, and I don't go there. And Gordon sent it to me. Thank you, Gordon. We'll be right back.
Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Time for retribution. Here comes the revolution.
Twenty-five before the hour. Now, moving from Ann Coulter and World Nut Daily over to Sarah Palin. You can't stand this, can you? Okay, well, like I said, if this part of the program irritates you or you don't like it, that's cool. I mean, I wouldn't listen to 3 hours of anybody doing anything. So, you know, you can leave and come back later because we do have some substantive issues to address later. Sarah Palin, you know, it hasn't been the greatest several months for the hoe from Wasilla. Why do you call her a hoe? Because John McCain pimped her to America during the 2008 political campaign. I'm not the one who declared her to be a hoe. That was John McCain. Sorry. Anyway, it hasn't been a great series of months here for Sarah Palin, the hoe from Wasilla, when it comes to her ability to influence political contests. In Tuesday's primaries, day before yesterday, the two candidates that she backed lost. That makes her 0 for 5 when it comes to endorsements this month. Ooh, Sarah Palin! Ah! In Washington State, Palin had backed teabag activist Clint Didier in his bid for the Senate over businessman Dino Rossi, who is the favorite of national Republicans. Now, these are Republicans. You know, don't look for any Democrat-Republican thing here. This is Sarah just making her presence totally ignorable for the rest of the political season, if you want to get right down to it. Anyway, Dino Rossi won. In making her endorsement of the teabagger Clint Didier last May, Palin said Didier had, quote, inspired her to what? Quit her job? And hailed him as a, quote, patriot running for U.S. Senate to serve his state and our country for all the right reasons, end quote. She didn't elaborate on that, what all the right reasons are, but not to worry. Anyway, he lost his ass. Palin went on to record a robocall for Didier, telling voters that, quote, unlike establishment candidates who just talk about lower taxes, Clint has signed a pledge to do so, end quote. This at a time when taxes in the United States are at their lowest level in since the Depression, since the 40s, 30s. Huh? But this is the favorite lie and meme of these right-wing psychopaths. Oh, taxes! The only people in this country who really think their taxes are too high are people who are looking for a free ride. That would be the ultra-rich and the teabaggers! Rossi easily defeated Didier in Tuesday's primary, beating him by more than 20 points. So much for the hoe from Wasilla. And by the way, Didier or Didier Clint is a former NFL player.
Woo!
Palin's candidate also lost out in the Wyoming governor's primary on Tuesday. In Wyoming, the former vice presidential nominee, that would be the hoe from Wasilla, backed what she referred to as a Mama Grizzly, state auditor Rita Meyer. Mama Grizzly. Do you like these terms from the hoe? Palin wrote on her Facebook page in July, quote, "Voters know that Rita has a unique blend of steel magnolia and Mama Grizzly," end quote. What does that mean? Well, to the voters, it didn't mean squat. She lost to U.S. Attorney Matthew Mead. Now, ultimately, it says here from CNN, Palin put a little effort into either race beyond a few sentences expressing support on her Facebook and Twitter pages. Still, the endorsements made big news in the local races. Yeah, the candidates all go for this. Hey, look, 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 look who endorsed me. Look, look, look. Well, how does it feel now, you morons? She endorsed you and you lost your ass, right? Now, here in Georgia, Tuesday a week ago, she had endorsed her handpicked candidate for governor of Georgia, Karen Handel, lost to another right wing freak named Nathan Deal. And the kiss of death, this race was very close. And you got to wonder if the hoe from Wasilla had kept her mouth shut and not made an appearance down here. That was really something to see. Karen Handel and the hoe from Wasilla standing on a platform and neither one of them knowing what the hell to say. Hi, why are you here? Why are you here? I don't know. What are we doing? I have no idea. Hey, vote for her. Hey, vote for me. Hey, why? Hey, because she said so. Hey, I lost. So you might think that had the hoe from Wasilla stayed out of Georgia, the Karen Handel might be the Republican nominee for governor right now. But that was not in the cards or the stars or whatever. Todd Tiart. These are some strange names. I'm sorry. Todd Tiart was trying to get the nominee for the Senate in Kansas. And Palin backed him. He lost. And in Tennessee, congressional candidate C.C. Heil also lost. Now, these are Palin picks. Palin's next tests come, when is it, next Tuesday? I think it's next Tuesday, when Alaska, Arizona, and Florida hold their primary votes. So we shall see. You know, thank God the hoe from Wasilla's 15 minutes are about over. I mean, this has been the longest 15 minutes in the history of Andy Warhol's famous statement. It just keeps going on and on and on, doesn't it, with Sarah Palin? Why does it? The only reason the Republicans pay any attention to her, the Republican men, is because they still consider her to be hot, hot, hot. Ow! Magstar sent me. Here's my favorite Glenn Beck quote ever. "I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I speak fluent bullcrap." Oh, Maggie in Mount Shasta sent this to me. "I am a recovering alcoholic, so I speak fluent bullcrap." No kidding, Glenn. You are fluent bullcrap. Who sent this in? WG. He writes, "Some things never change," or she writes, "I was watching an old movie called Pressure Point with Sidney Poitier and Bobby Darin." And it is an old movie. Sidney Poitier played a psychiatrist treating a neo-Nazi American during World War II. At one point, Poitier says something like, "Why do you hate blacks, neo-Nazi? Why do you hate whites?" Poitier, "What do you mean, neo-Nazi? You Negroes always want someone to feel sorry for you. You Negroes must have died and gone to heaven when the Jew Roosevelt became president." End quote. WG writes, I can't find the exact dialogue, but this is how I remember it. And I remember thinking that if the neo-Nazi had said Muslim Obama instead of Jew Roosevelt, I could have been listening to the Glenn Beck Show. Very true. Oh, by the way, did you know, regarding the mosque controversy, you know, in New York near Ground Zero, do you know there's a mosque, sort of, in the Pentagon? What about that one? Ah, come on, you teabag morons. Come on, you jack-legged right-wingers. What about the mosque-worshipping Islam place inside the Pentagon? Let me see here. According to CNN, less than 100 feet from where a hijacked airline slammed into the Pentagon, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Muslim military personnel bring prayer rugs on Wednesday afternoons for group worship. On Fridays, a local imam conducts the service in the Pentagon Memorial Chapel. Come on, Mike. Jesus. In the Pentagon Memorial Chapel, built after the September 11, 2001 terror attacks by Al-Qaeda that killed 184 people at the U.S. military headquarters. The chapel provides a place of prayer and religious observation for anyone, regardless of faith or culture. Well, imagine that. For anyone, including the Muslims? Oh, no! Oh, no! To chaplains who work in army chapels around the world, the tolerance and openness represent the sport and camaraderie of military culture. Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Carlton Birch, spokesman for the Army Chief of Chaplains, said, quote, what happens here is normal, end quote. My goodness, the Muslims can worship in the Pentagon less than 100 feet from where the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, hijacked airliner crashed in. Oh, my.
This country's up in smoke. Oh, what a joke.
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
10 before the hour, regarding the mosque building, and why do I focus on that? For the obvious reasons. A couple of letters to the editor in the New York Times this morning. I like this one. It's written by somebody named Adam Shaw. Writes to the editor, the stated motive of building an Islamic center and mosque near Ground Zero is to bring Muslims and non-Muslims together. A worthwhile goal. Fostering good relations between different communities requires, above all else, sensitivity and the ability to see through the eyes of the other. But then he writes this. Some Muslims, by insisting on their right, quote, quote, to build this mosque where other Muslims killed thousands of Americans, show an astounding level of insensitivity and are thwarting their alleged goal of increasing understanding and harmony. Andrew M. Shaw, Baltimore. You know, you read that, or I read that. I would imagine somebody would read that, or anybody would read that, that still has just a little bit of a brain left that is capable of thought. Someone would read that, especially in a line that says, by insisting to build a mosque near where other Muslims killed thousands of Americans, show an astounding level of insensitivity. How many mosques would you say the United States, in its military war crimes around the globe, how many mosques have been blown up? How many Muslims have been killed? I think the kill ratio probably, I'm just guessing here, but according to the figures I read from The Lancet and from other medical journals, if you take into account, let's say 3,000 people died on U.S. soil, they were not all American citizens, that's beside the point, 3,000 people died on American soil on September 11, 2001. Now, since we're in the business of blood and gore and Christian versus Muslim, we have to then ask the question, how does that relate to the number of Muslims killed by Christian Americans, either in retaliation or prior to? You got to remember, almost a decade prior to the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the United States, again, without provocation, invaded Iraq the first time. Now, I know.
Well, they invaded Kuwait.
Did they, or were they given permission by the Bush crime family? Pappy Bush crime family, the senior branch of the crime family. But in that invasion, the first time in Iraq, we left hundreds of thousands of dead, and we also left a legacy of babies being born with no heads, babies being born with two heads to kind of make up for the one that was born without a head. You see how that works? You know, depleted uranium will do that. Babies born with no digestive systems, people dying and dropping like flies. That's what we did. And yet, right in the middle of Baghdad, in the green zone, the Christians will conduct services. That seems very insensitive, doesn't it? But the writer to the Times says, to build a mosque where other Muslims killed thousands of Americans shows an astounding level of insensitivity. Astounding? Maybe it shows a level of insensitivity, but astounding, isn't that a comparative term? Do we not kinda, if we're going to be honest or just, do we not have to compare it to the number of Muslims that have been killed by Christians and the number of mosques that have been firebombed and the number of Christian observances that are conducted? I mean, didn't Osama bin Laden say, subsequent or prior to the attacks of 9/11, didn't he say that the invader had to get away from the Muslim holy places? You know, we used to have military bases in Saudi Arabia. Why? Because the Saudis like our money, and they like the fact that we buy their oil. They don't like Christianity, and well, they shouldn't. They're Muslim. And Muslims and Christians have been killing each other since there have been Muslims and Christians, and they will continue to do so. But when I read this morning, and I think some Muslims, by insisting on their right, quote, to build this mosque where other Muslims killed thousands of Americans, show an astounding level of insensitivity and are thwarting their alleged goal of increasing understanding and harmony. Well, isn't our goal in Afghanistan, for example, to increase understanding and harmony between or among Americans and Afghans and, you know, Muslims and Christians? Isn't that our stated goal? How are we accomplishing that by destroying houses of worship wherein Muslims do their religious thing? Oh. Whatever. Don't you get tired of it? All right, we have a break here. When we come back, I have a report from Prairie 2. And it's not very uplifting one at all. But it is a report from Prairie 2. We also have a couple of emails. And what else do we have? Oh, yeah, a little bit about the egg recall. Have you heard about that? Half a billion eggs be careful what you eat for breakfast. Now, you shouldn't be buying those kinds of eggs anyway. You should be going to your local, and it's usually on in a church parking lot someplace or a bank parking lot where the local growers from your area, we went to one yesterday over here in Decatur, Georgia. The local growers will set up their little booths and they'll sell eggs produced by chickens in their backyard. And you know that they're not full of salmonella and death, right? And you buy the so-called heritage tomatoes. You know what that means? That means tomatoes that don't have a rabbit gene in them or something. That's where you should be getting your tomato, or your what I call heritage, I mean heirloom. That's where you should be getting your eggs. But no, most people don't. We'll talk about that and some other stuff. Stick around. Miles to go before we sleep. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy Show. This would be a good place to bring in Prairie 2's economic report. He is our economic affairs correspondent, and the one he has submitted today is a little bit, okay, more than a little bit scary. But hell, everything he writes is scary. You can go to his website, prairie2.com. The subject line, today's economic report. Go to prison if you want a job. See, I told you. Unemployment claims topped 500,000 last week for the first time in 9 months. Home builders and construction companies are laying off large numbers despite this being the peak of the construction season. The number of people getting extended unemployment benefits under the federal program grew by 300,000 last week alone. There's no number available for how many people exceeded the 99-week limit last week and have been kicked to the curb. With little or no jobs being created, it would seem likely to be in the hundreds of thousands, reflecting the number who originally joined the program 99 weeks ago in September 2008, when layoffs were just starting to get into high gear. This is only going to get worse, as we will be coming into the peak period of layoffs over the next 6 months. There is a bill in Congress to provide a fifth tier of benefits for the 99ers, but the Republicans, surprise, surprise, and the conservative Democrats, surprise, surprise, are holding it hostage in order to gain an extension of the Bush tax cuts for the ultra wealthy. At the same time, there are calls to double all taxes to recover from the multi-trillion dollar deficits left from the Bush administration, but not to roll back the Reagan tax cuts that cut the top rate from 74% on incomes over $3 million in today's dollars. Billionaires who structure their incomes to pretend they're only paid dividends and interest are paying, according to the IRS, an average of 16%. 16%. That's what billionaires pay. And they don't pay Social Security taxes either on most of their income. They also are attracted to live in states that don't have state income taxes, instead getting their revenue, these states, by gouging the poor. You see how this works? Are you waking up? Excuse me. The rich also get gold-plated lifestyles through their companies, executive chefs, personal assistants, chauffeured limos, private jets, vacation villas, and golf outings around the globe to discuss business. All of this costing millions per executive, and it's tax-free. The corporations offshore their profits in order to pay no taxes. Fully two-thirds of corporations operating in the U.S. pay zero taxes. And some even get billions back from all manner of schemes put in place by the Bush crime family. For example, British Petroleum has been using free prisoner labor to do beach cleanup and gets a $2,500 tax credit for each slave, trainee, that they use. All of the manufacturing training jobs in prisons have been eliminated and have been replaced by call centers. There's a 50-50 chance that if you talk to a customer service rep on the phone who isn't in India, a 50-50 chance you are talking to an inmate. At least the inmate knows he'll have a job tomorrow. How about you? PrairieNumeral2.com if you would like to comment or debate or read some of his other stuff. Now, regarding that, I saw this in the paper yesterday, in Times yesterday. There's a company in Williamson, New York. It is the Mott's apple juice plant. You're familiar with that. M-O-T-T, Mott's apple juice. Mott's, right? Mott's, you know Mott's? Eh? Mott's? Now, the company that owned Mott's is a conglomerate. No, none of these companies are not owned by some other capitalist pig. Mott's is the beverage conglomerate Dr. Pepper Snapple Group. That's what it's called, Dr. Pepper Snapple Group. Dr. Pepper Snapple. They own Mott's apple juice company. All right, you got the background? There's a plant in Williamson, New York, that is making plenty of money. But they went to their workers and said, guess what? We're making plenty of money, but you people are making too much. You people are making like an average of about $18, $19 an hour. Well, you got to give some of that back. Why? The union said. The company's not in trouble. The company's making a fortune. Ah, well, because everybody else up here in upstate New York, they're not making that much. So? So we don't want you to make that much. What? All right. That's the backstory. After 90 days of picketing in the broiling sun outside the sprawling Mott's apple juice plant here in upstate New York, Michelle Muoio recognizes that the lengthy strike is about far more than whether the 305 hourly workers at the plant get a fatter or slimmer paycheck. The union movement and many outsiders view the strike as a high-stakes confrontation between a company that wants to cut its labor costs even as it's earning record profits, and workers who are determined to resist demands for wage and benefit givebacks. Now, do you understand this? Do you get this? Please, for Christ's sake, I don't care what your political affiliation is. If you're a Republican and you're still trying to find a job, this is how corporate America cuts your throat. And this is how Beck and the rest of these right-wing bastards on media convince you to keep sticking your neck out and showing them where the veins are. Are you mad? The company that owns Mott's, Dr. Pepper Snapple Group, says that the Mott's workers are overpaid compared with other production workers in the Rochester, New York area where the plant is. Huh? Where blue-collar employment is high after years of layoffs at employers like Xerox and Kodak. Are you getting this? Chris Barnes, a pig, filthy company spokesman, says Dr. Pepper Snapple Group is seeking a $1.50 an hour wage cut, a pension freeze, and other concessions to bring the plant's cost in line with, quote, local and industry standards, end quote. Can you goddamn believe this? These workers go to work, and they are so productive that this filthy company starts making record profits. How are the workers paid back? We're going to cut your wages because everybody else around here in the Rochester, New York area, they're not making any money. Why should you? The company, which has 50 brands, including 7-Up and Hawaiian Punch, reported net income of $500 million in 2009, compared with the company loss of $312 million the previous year. Unlike previous battles where American manufacturers have often sought to cut labor costs by threatening to close plants or move operations overseas, Dr. Pepper Snapple is not making those threats. No, we just don't want to pay you so much. Record profits. Do you understand me? Record profits. Dr. Pepper Snapple is saying, we have no financial need for this. We just want to do it anyway because we figure we can get away with it. Because if you don't do it, we're just going to bring in scab labor. And you $19 an hour workers can go pound sand up your noses, right?
Us peppers are an interesting breed. An original taste is what we need. Ask any pepper and it'll say, only Dr. Pepper tastes that way.
Renegade Talk Radio done right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So back to the story from upstate New York, Williamson, New York, near the Rochester. Not Rochester. Wherever. Upstate New York. So the workers at this Mott plant have been so efficient and done such a good job that the Apple plant is making record profits. So how are they, the workers, asked to be rewarded for that? The pigs that run the plant, the capitalist overlords, go to the workers and say, hey, listen, you're making too much money. Everybody else around here is only making, you know, $12, $14, $15 an hour. You're making, some of you are making $19 an hour. And we can't have that. So we expect you to let us cut your pay and your pension benefits and other concessions. We want a $1.50 an hour wage cut because we got to bring things in line with local standards. You people are making too damn much money, right? So negotiations between the workers and this filthy pig capitalist plant have not been held since May. And Dr. Pepper Snapple Group says it has no intention of resuming those talks. The company has continued to operate the plant using replacement workers. They're called scabs. And says, Dr. Pepper Snapple Group says the production of apple juice and applesauce is growing each day. What they're saying is, F you, you crappy ass workers. We don't need you. We don't need to pay you $17, $18 an hour. What are you talking about? We got these other people that work for 12, and pretty soon we'll tell them they have to work for 10. And when unemployment around here goes up to 12, 15, 20%, then we'll get them for 6. The MOTS workers voted 250-5 to strike, and they walked out May 23rd. They were furious about the company's demands to cut their wages by about $3,000 a year, freeze pensions, end pensions for new hires, reduce the company's 401k retirement contributions, and increase employees' costs for health care benefits. Dr. Pepper Snapple Group said it was merely seeking to bring its benefits more in line with those at the other plants. You know. You sons of bitches. Oh, I know, I'm not supposed to cuss. I'm supposed to sit here like a good little talk show host and not say things like that. See? Even before the strike, boat workers were stewing, saying that management had begun treating them far worse after Cadbury Schweppes, the former owner, spun off this division, creating Dr. Pepper Snapple. See how they're all interlinked? You see how all the... Huh? Right? Huh? The new management eliminated their bonuses, eliminated the summer picnic, eliminated the year-end holiday party for employees' children. Huh? And some of the workers complained. Now, with the apple harvest, it's about to start in upstate New York. The growers up there are eager for this thing to be settled. They're concerned that the plant, which traditionally buys half the apples produced in the region, will cut back because the plant's output has fallen. But the plant says production's going up every single day. We're making lots of applesauce. We don't give a damn about these $19 an hour workers. We don't need them. We've got $12 an hour workers, and eventually we're going to have $3 an hour workers. One guy whose orchards produce 100,000 bushels of apples a year says, "We've got the most to lose. We've got millions of apples about to be picked." Justifying the proposed cuts, the management, the pig capitalists here, say that the MOTS workers averaged $21 an hour compared with the $14 an hour average for production, transportation, and material moving workers in the Rochester, New York area. Well, everybody else up here only makes $14 an hour because the other capitalist pigs are gouging them. Here we're paying people $19, $20, $21 an hour. What? You know, when we get together, all of us capitalists, we get laughed at. So we're going to cut your pay. We're going to cut your pension. We're going to cut your 401k. No more parties for your goddamn children either. Ha! Christmas party! Ha! Union officials say that 70% of the plant's workers earn $19 an hour or less, and that they many are highly experienced and deserve well more than $14 an hour. Dr. Pepper Snapple Group, based in Plano, Texas, there's a surprise, has sought to win public support by running full-page ads in Rochester's main newspaper. One recent ad said, "Mott's pays more. Would you walk away from a manufacturing job that paid you as much as 50% more than you could make elsewhere? That's what union workers did at Mott's."
Just as long as fate is out there busting somebody.
And some of you people wonder why I get very upset. I know, not that you give a damn, but this is one of the reasons. We'll be right back.
I saw the boss come walking down along the factory line, saying, "Boys, we have to tighten up our belts." But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago, and I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make.
If you're a man.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
So what we're talking about here is the situation up in Williamson, New York, where the Dr. Pepper Snapple Group which owns Mott's Apple Juice. Think about this the next time you go into a store. If you buy Mott's Apple Juice, you are saying to workers like yourself, if you're a worker, unemployed or employed, that they can go to hell and that you are on the side of the capitalist corporatist pigs who are doing this. The management came in and eliminated the bonuses, eliminated the company picnic, eliminated the year-end holiday party for employees' children. They cut their wages, or attempted to, by $3,000 a year. They froze pensions. They end pensions for new hires. They reduced the company's 401k contributions and increased employees' costs for health care and benefits. This, in spite of the fact that the company has never been more profitable in its history, it is making a fortune because of the work. Workers busting their asses. The workers took a vote and went out on strike. Now they've hired scab labor, and management of this place is insisting that everything is fine and the workers can go to hell. And the reason they decided to cut everything is not because the company was in financial trouble, but because the company wanted more. They wanted more, and they wanted the workers to have less. They said to the workers, look, other workers in this area with this massive unemployment are only making $14 an hour, and you're making $19. We're going to pay you $14. And the workers said, no, you're not. So the company took out an ad, and then the company did some other things I'll share with you in a second. But the workers, meanwhile, are really pissed off that the company is demanding givebacks when the company posted record profits last year and increased its dividend by 67% in May. The company, in other words, is wallowing in money. But to these greedy bastards, it's never enough. And as long as the workers roll over, as long as the workers do not get organized, these workers are organized. But where are other workers around the country going out on sympathy strikes? Where are other workers around the United States saying, wait a minute? Not going to happen. Mike LaBerth, president of the union local representing the strikers, said the following, quote, corporate America is making tons of money. This company is a good example of that. Didn't Prairie 2 send me something last week that said corporate America is sitting on top of $1 trillion in profits? Cash! They're just sitting there while they're cutting more jobs. They finally figured it out, didn't they? With an 8-year-long boost from Bush-Cheney, corporate America figured it out. Mike LaBerth went on, so why do they want to drive down our wages and hurt our community? This whole economy is driven by consumer spending, so how are we supposed to keep the economy going when they take away money from the people who are doing the spending? End quote. Dr. Pepper Snapple Group has vigorously defended what it's doing. It released a statement saying, quote, the union contends that a profitable company shouldn't seek concessions from its workers. This argument ignores the fact that as a public company, Dr. Pepper Snapple Group has a fiduciary responsibility to operate in the best interests of all its constituents, recognizing that a profitable business attracts investment, generates jobs, and builds communities, and we are pig sons of bitches who will eat your children if we're given a chance. We will destroy you. You have a mortgage? You have rent, you have a car payment, we don't care. We want your money. Give us back our money, you little pig workers. Give us back our money. You see where this is heading, don't you? Huh? The union is straining to maximize pressure on management. It has enlisted several prominent New York Democrats, including Senator Charles Schumer, Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, to urge the company to resume bargaining. I know what I would do. And then I would go to jail. But I know what I would do. I've had enough of this. I'm not going to say what I would do because I don't want to be accused of making terroristic threats. But in my little head right here, see right here, if you're watching the video, right here in my little head and right here in my little heart, I know exactly what I would do. I've had enough. If I were a worker at this plant, after busting my ass, the one woman who's quoted in here, Mrs. Moyo, Michelle Moyo, she's worked there for 15 years. She's a machine operator. She makes $19 an hour. She said, quote, it's disgusting, honestly, that they want to take things away from the people who made them profitable. I know what I would do, and then I would go to jail for the rest of my life. Because I know exactly what I would do, because I've had enough. Tim Budd, another employer there, 24 years he's worked there. 24 years he's worked for the Apple plant. 24 years. He belongs to the union's bargaining team, said he was shocked by one thing the plant manager said during negotiations, before negotiations ended. Quote, he said that we, the workers, were a commodity like soybeans and oil. And the price of commodities go up and down. He said there are thousands of people in this area out of jobs, so they could hire any of them for $14 an hour. It made me sick to have someone sit across the table from me and say, I'm not worth the money I make. The company spokesman, Mr. Barnes, said, well, Mr. Budd took our statement out of context. He said, quote, we'd prefer that our employees return to work and the door is open for them to come back, but we're prepared to continue operating without them. So next time you're in the store, I wouldn't buy Mott's apple juice if somebody held a gun to my head. I'd say, pull the trigger, bastard, and it'd probably be Glenn Beck looking for somebody to suicide. I would not buy any of these products. If my life depended on it, I would not. I will drink mud puddle water before I would ever. I don't drink Mott's apple juice anyway. I think it's poison. Yes, Kathy?
I kind of like Snapple.
Not anymore, you don't.
No more Dr. Pepper?
Sand writes in, hi, this is 8 miles from me. The apple juice thing. And the workers are out there in front of the plant 24/7. My husband, a union teacher, and I stand with them often. For a rally last month, the company, Snapple, rented a huge American flag and put it up on the building. After the rally, the flag was gone. You know, after the photographers came and left. Hey, the big flag. Hey, we're just a patriotic American company trying to employ these goddamn ungrateful apple workers.
Did the flag happen to say mission accomplished?
I bet it did. Sand writes, whenever I go down there, there are less and less people walking the picket line. It is so sad. Some of these folks got in trouble recently for going into stores and taping a message, you know, I guess to the products, regarding the strike. Sand. I mean, even back in the day when those of us who are my age, and Jesus Christ, I'm getting old, back in the day when those of us my age were not this old and would respond, I'm talking about back in the 60s and the 70s, I never heard of stuff like this, where a company that is making record profits says to the workers, if you want to stay here and work making your $19 an hour, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go down to $14 an hour or $17 an hour. No more contributions to the 401k for your retirement. Your health care costs are going to go up, your contribution. Oh, no more picnic for your little curtain climbers, and no more Christmas party for the little bastards either. And you're going to accept this, and you're going to accept it willingly and joyfully with a smile on your face and a song in your heart. Because if you don't, go ahead, do your little walkout. Do your little strike. We don't care. Do you realize where you are, you stupid worker bastards? You're in the Rochester, New York area, you stupid worker bastards. Do you not understand unemployment around here is off the charts? Do you not understand that even though we're making record profits, we can cut your throat? Because there are people out here who will come into the plant and go to work for $12 an hour. And you and your rent or your mortgage payment or your car payment or the charge account down at the local department store or your MasterCard, you can just bite me. I am the boss. I will tell you what you will make. And take your little toy union with you. And there's the door. Get out of my factory. Well, like I said, I know what I would do. And then I would spend the rest of my life in jail. We have a break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. One more to go before we bail out. Before the hour, did you have fun on the program? Did you have a good time with this broadcast? Did you? Tomorrow night, Friday night, we will be live in the evening, and we will be doing podcast trivia. Just FYI. Regarding, we didn't get to the egg story. I guess we'll do that tomorrow. Half a billion eggs. Okay, I'm exaggerating. Only 300 million eggs have been recalled by a company in Iowa because of salmonella. Salmonella, that's actually inside the chicken. And then when the chicken drops the, well, Prairie 2 writes, last time there was this kind of a salmonella outbreak, the kind that can penetrate the membrane of an egg and live inside the egg. The FDA banned two new antibiotics that were creating the mutations in salmonella bacteria. I'll bet you a Denver omelet that they'll either ban more antibiotics or they'll find that the chicken farms are using fish meal from China to feed the chickens. You see, in China, they build the chicken houses over the catfish ponds to increase efficiency. This wouldn't be a problem, except that they still use these antibiotics that have been banned, and the antibiotics concentrate in the fish, and then the fish die, and they're ground up into fish meal that's then imported to the United States, and it goes to chicken farms, and the chicken eats them, and the eggs come out, and Americans, by the scores and hundreds, get sick, and the unlucky ones drop dead from eating an egg. And Tom in Joshua Tree, California writes, The problem is the failure of the American so-called left. The left wants to mystify these issues with a let's all get along mentality. They will not identify the social and mental disease that is riding America to death from the inside. Instead, they want pretty stories about happy times, the way right-wingers want horror stories of revenge and end-of-days extinction, all to hide behind. to run their cowardly inner games of avoidance, a way to hide their lack of conscience, a way to dress up their complicity in crimes against humanity. It is the apathy, the passive side of the passive-aggressive coin. On one side, it's got a picture of Glenn Beck. On the other side, it's Joe Lieberman. And with this coin of cowardice, ignorance, and complicity, the left bargains with all the Ann Coulters and Becks and Hannitys and Limbaughs and pleasant-looking Eichmanns. Oh, you want 6 million? No, absolutely not. 3 million, and that stops. He's talking about dead people. And the left calls that a victory. What to do? We're outnumbered, outmediated, outgunned, and outjudicialized. Who do we live for? Who do we fight for? How and with what? Oh, and by the way, Obama just confirmed Michelle Linhart, a Bush appointee, to head the DEA. Her stated purpose is the eradication of medicinal marijuana and hemp everywhere and forever, and state laws be damned. Obama, our liberal friend. Tom, Joshua Tree, P.S., the union argument that consumer spending drives the economy is a false premise. It is as false as Allah and Jesus and Mary are going to save our cowardly little asses from the purgatory of our hell on earth. What drives our economy is the rape of our natural resources and the enslavement and genocide of our humanity. Until people understand that, nothing will change. Tom. Well, you know, like a lot of folks, I guess, I feel more a part of the problem than a part of the solution. I really do. That's just, I guess that's the nature of most of us. You know, I read someplace that the driving psychological force in Asian countries is shame, and the driving psychological force, negatives I'm talking about, in Western societies is guilt. I don't know if that's true or not. I've never taken a course in comparative psychology vis-a-vis cultural aspects of how people are motivated to do bad things, whether it's shame or guilt or a combination of both. I don't know. But I know that most of the time I feel a sense of guilt that somehow I'm not doing anything. I have this little toy radio program, you know, that we get involved in 3 hours a day. Whoop. I just wonder sometimes, you know, what it takes. I think about now that I know the story, and if you're listening to this program, you know the story of the workers at the Mott Apple Juice plant in upstate New York who busted their ass. Some of them have been working there for 20 years and longer, busted their ass to make the company profitable. And how does the company respond? We're paying you too much. And if you don't accept our cuts, screw you. We'll hire scabs. And the union doesn't have any power left anymore to say, no, you won't, no, you won't. And the workers up in Rochester, New York area, non-unionized workers, what do you expect them to do? They have children to feed, too. They have rent to pay, too. So when they see their brothers and sisters walking a picket line, what do they say? Something along these lines. Well, they can't walk there forever. And when they're all gone, I'll go apply for a job. $12 an hour sounds pretty good to me right now. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.